The Guardian.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a one-month, no-commitment trial of the Audible service. Audible has over 50,000 audiobook titles available to download. Go to guardian.co.uk/audible for further details.
Football Weekly Extra. Today, Veni, Vidi, but not Vici as Wenger fails Latin test. Just. But better news elsewhere for Arsenal with signing of Lucas Podolski. Will Arsene's Kolonic intervention help with season that's proving tough to digest? Elsewhere in Champions League, Nicosia later Lyon as Apple become first Cypriots in quarterfinals. And Leo Messi, 5 goals in a single Champions League match. He really is every bit as good as Joe Cole. There's Raphael Honigstein on Bayer's blowout and the Bundesliga posts, tweets and our bumper look at the weekend's matches in the Premier League. All of that in today's Football Weekly Extra. And a very warm welcome in today's Football Weekly Extra to Paolo Bandini.
Hello.
And a broad continental selection today because there's Raphael Honigstein.
Hello, James.
Hi, Raphael.
Why are you picking on Joe Cole?
I'm not picking on Joe Cole. Oh, the Messi thing. Because when he went to Liverpool in that glorious chapter of his glorious career, you remember Steven Gerrard said he is every bit as good as Leo Messi. Bang on, Stephen. Evan Fanning, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Anything you wanted to pick me up on?
Well, I would say that Joe Cole probably contributed about as much to Liverpool as Lionel Messi has.
To Liverpool?
Yeah, nothing all right. at all.
Aha. Right, now we start today with Tuesday night at the Emirates. You were there, Paolo. Bitter and sweet, or sweet and bitter, perhaps.
I think for most Arsenal fans, it was, I think, still an overwhelmingly positive experience, despite going out. I think most people, you know, there was a lot of the crowd, a significant percentage, stayed at the end and were still singing and getting, you know, offering support to the team. Because I think, look, the way Milan have played this season, generally, nobody thought that this was really even a remote possibility. So I think if you look in the context of again, of Milan's other results this season, nobody's beating them 3-0. No one's blowing them off the park like that. So, look, they'd put themselves in a terrible position with a really, really bad first leg. And I think that a lot of people felt like, especially in the circumstances where Arsenal again had players injured and Oxlade-Chamberlain having to go off, you know, winning 3-0 is not a bad run at it. And as well as anything, I think what's important to a lot of people now is maintaining this run for the end of the season in the league, because there's been some good form recently and the fear was that this is the sort of game that might knock them back out of it.
Mm. We'll talk more about Arsenal and the race for third a bit later on. On the subject of Milan, though, it was interesting after all those previews and all the talk about the Champions League collapse in Istanbul and their famous disaster against Deportivo La Coruña, that they went ahead and did exactly the same thing. Of course, they always say that 2-0 is a dangerous scoreline. So you can imagine 4-0. There must have been really, really worried going out.
I talked to Mark van Bommel after the game, who's actually a lovely guy off the pitch when he's not wearing any boots and trying to kick you. And he said it wasn't about arrogance or overconfidence. It was actually more the opposite, because they got really nervous when Arsenal pushed them and pressed them as much as they did and started giving the ball away. And that's why he was constantly doing this with his arms up and down. He didn't try to fly
Raphael's
away.
Raphael's doing a kind of albatross flapping thing.
And he looked from far away as if he was trying to lift off and maybe escape this awful match that they were having. But he was actually trying to calm his teammates down. And he said, another interesting point from him was, he said, when Milan had their first real attack in the game, I think it was probably minute 40 with the El Shaarawy chance where he was 1-on-1 and should have scored. He said that changed everything, because Arsenal from then on were just a little bit deeper and a little bit more careful, and that allowed them more time, and then they settled in the second half.
Mm. I think that point about the mentality is really interesting as well, in the light of Zlatan Ibrahimovic reportedly had a big powwow with Max Allegri, the manager, in the changing room, was very angry with him. And you read his quotes today, and he's sort of talking about, well, we shouldn't have gone on there with three attackers, which they did, obviously, playing with Rubinho and El Shaarawy alongside him. But what I actually found interesting when in Ibrahimovic's comments, which is the comments he's made to the Swedish press after the game, is that he said, you know, every time Arsenal got the ball, I was thinking, oh, but what if they score here? And, you know, what does it say that you know, your talismanic player is thinking this right from the beginning of the game? He's thinking, oh, but what if they score here? Well, you know, you can blame Allegri for the tactical decisions. I think he made some poor decisions for this game. But actually, I do think that there was something running through the players just in terms of nervousness. And I guess Arsenal's early goal did nothing to help that. But yeah, it's an insight into him. And actually, I think everyone's looking at a Nocerino chance at the end of the game, which he should have scored. But Ibrahimovic had a great chance to score when there was a iffy clearance from Chesney. He had it about 20 yards out. If he'd put it on the other side of the net, he would have got it. And again, I think if Ibrahimovic had been maybe not so nervous, he might have done.
Was everyone else as astonished as I was by the presence of this Mesba fellow there on the field? Just to put this in perspective, in January, Milan picked up this kind of squad player from the bottom team in Serie A, recently bottom team, Lecce. This kind of journeyman defender, Algerian defender. And was this his Milan debut? I've never seen him.
No, he's played a couple of games in the league, but he's not been a regular in the team. He is, as you say, a squad player who's been added. It's his first game in Europe, and it was
his last one, would imagine.
Very possibly. It was certainly a baptism of fire for him. He wasn't good at all. And I know Antonini wasn't in perfect nick, but again, it's interesting because Allegri does seem to have sort of made some decisions to go, oh, well, you know, we can give El Shaarawy a try, who's not playing that many matches as well, and we can give these guys a try. But he also had two keepers on the bench. He had Roma and Amelia, which doesn't exactly speak to a manager who's entirely
just
confident.
Just in case.
What did you make of it?
Well, I just thought, you know, it really just kind of highlighted the disaster of the first leg, but in terms of, you know, beating Milan 3-0 is a pretty good achievement, except, you know, you need four. And it showed why Oxlade-Chamberlain, I don't know why he didn't play the first game. And it also highlighted the kind of lack of depth in Arsenal's squad, which is, everyone has been saying it's a problem for a long, long time. But it's interesting that Arsenal's kind of, you say Arsenal can take the positive for it and the fans, because they've got three wins in a row now. Spurs, who capitulated, Liverpool, who should have destroyed them in that first half if they had any sort of decent striker, and Milan, who barely showed up at all, and they've managed to turn their seasons around a bit without, you know, doing an awful lot.
And what's an interesting point that was put to me was, well, actually, wouldn't extra time have been a real disaster for Arsenal given the games they've got coming up and how important it is? Now, I mean, look, it depends how you see it. Obviously, if you see it as, well, they've got a chance to go on to win the Champions League. But I think there are some fans anyway who sort of went, well, we're not going to win this anyway, and we really need to get fourth place, and we're losing players every few minutes. Maybe we're better off just getting out of this with our pride and escaping.
Raphael, you got your finger in the air, and I presume you do care, so you have a point.
Maybe, possibly. Oh. It's really interesting, isn't it? Because if you told an Arsenal supporter before the start of the season, look, you'll be out of the Champions League before the quarters, you might finish fourth, you're not winning any cups, what would the reaction have been? But because what went before that has been so bad, now there's almost this air of triumphalism in northeast London, saying, you know, this has been actually a really good season, and now we can look forward again, and there's a perspective and there's a future. And you just, I mean, you couldn't help but leaving the stadium with that optimism about the team. But how many years, you know, do you want to feel that optimism? And and I thought it was ironic, both ironic, incredibly ironic, but also strangely fitting that Van Persie should miss that killer chance, because in a way...
Did he miss, or was it actually a brilliant save
from
Christian Abbiati?
No, he missed. Because he went for the beautiful option rather than just pull.
And Abbiati got an arm.
I actually, you know what, I thought exactly the same thing the first time I saw it. I thought he's tried to be clever when he could have just banged that in. But when I saw it from the other side, because I was behind the goal, I saw it from the other side, I actually think he did... You know, Dennis Bergkamp's talked about this. There was a great interview by David Winner with him a while ago about why he liked to chip so much. And he said, well, sometimes that's the angle. You know, people think, you know, going right and left is your angle, but, you know, you've got more room over the keeper than you have to sides him. And I think that was a situation Van Persie was in. He's so close to him that actually his angle's very poor either side of the keeper, whereas going over him, he's got a lot of space to work with. And I think that Abbiati does a great job getting his hand up to that.
They're both bald.
I completely disagree. It's exactly because he's so close that his angle for chipping him is actually very bad.
All right.
But I still, as I said, I mean, it's quite fitting in a way. ironic because he's obviously the best player and that he should miss, but also fitting because in the end, I'm afraid to say, it kind of sums up Arsenal as a club over the last 7 years. It's a kind of beautifully, aesthetically pleasing failure.
Hmm. Question, would Podolski have scored it?
I'm sure he would have scored it. He would have just hit it as hard as he could,
yep.
And it might have just bounced off Abiati's head into the goal, but he Lovely. Certainly would have tried to, all he right. wouldn't have tried to lob him.
So that deal is now done. Is that all confirmed? Lukas Podolski going from Cologne to Arsenal. No, you're shaking your head.
It's not confirmed, but
It's
kind of.
All right, then. And he's 26. He scored 16 goals, Raphael, stats reveal,
yep.
in what's been a pretty drab season for Cologne.
Yeah, without him, they'd be. I mean, they are betting relegation. Without him, they'd probably already be in the second division. He's been absolutely... He's been their Van Persie, but at a much lower level because, they're fighting against relegation.
Is that a combination that you see working, assuming that Van Persie doesn't do one?
Well, it's quite interesting because I was told that back in January when they talked about him, he had some reservations because he felt, if I move now, where am I going to play? Yes, Gervinho wasn't around. He was at the Africa Cup of Nations, but Van Persie is obviously the number one starter. And I think there was a sense, certainly that's how it was relayed to me, that Podolski wasn't quite sure he would fit into that side. Now, what does that move now mean? Does it actually mean that he will be the new Van Persie because Van Persie's off, or Arsenal are bracing themselves for the possibility? Or are they thinking about putting him out wide left? Well, he definitely would be an upgrade on Gervinho. I don't think that's an overstatement. Or could easily also play off him. Or perhaps, which hasn't been tried yet, play as an inverted wide player, which would probably please Jonathan Wilson, on the right-hand side and then cut in on his left foot because he's really very strong.
There's a bit of a queue on the right-hand side, isn't there? There's a bit of a queue on the right-hand side, isn't there?
For Arsenal, yeah. I know, but, I mean, he would certainly give him lots of options. So right. I think it's a great signing in many ways. The price is good. But, and, I mean,
it's
I don't want
but.
To...
Go on.
It's not that big a but it's a but. I think a few years ago, if Arsenal would have looked at Podolski, I think I would have said it's impossible. He's not quite good enough for Arsenal. And now I just feel they're looking at players, they're just a little bit off the top players in the world. And I think it shows maybe the realities of, the constraints that they're working on under. I'd be more excited if, as an Arsenal fan, if he was slightly in a bigger bracket of superstar
names.
I've
never looked at the top players in the world, not under Wenger.
Well, he used to buy them and then make them.
Well, they became them, that.
They
yeah.
became that, yes.
Well, my question with Podolski was just, didn't he have, we've seen this before, he goes to a big club and it doesn't work out. Is he going to be one of those players who was just, in his element in Cologne and that's where it works for him?
It's a very interesting question. And so far, all the noises coming out from the people he works with, the people he plays with, says, he's grown up, he's much more mature now, he won't sit at home. I don't know, maybe in Totteridge or whatever they put him in and thinking about Cologne all day. And I think also he's matured on the pitch. That was a big problem for him because at Bayern, he still felt he was playing kind of the superstar footballer he was at Köln, where everything went through him. At Bayern, he was just another of those strikers. And he didn't really adjust to that situation, to that loss of status. And I think coming abroad, it'll be easier to do that because you cannot go to the Premier League and to Arsenal and think, I'm the big man. You'll know that you'll have to fit in and find your place.
It sounds like he'll fit in as well with the whole Arsene Wenger approach to football. He's a man who once said, football is like chess, but without the dice. So
I don't think he said that.
He said that, apparently.
No,
apparently that's been confirmed by Football Weekly listeners. There you go. It is an exciting prospect. Third place. Arsenal was talking about maybe getting fourth, but now you've got to look at third and think, hey, Spurs, they're in trouble, aren't they? Arsenal taking on Newcastle on Monday night, of course. Spurs, meanwhile, have a very difficult game this weekend. They're at Everton, and bits are falling off them.
That's a way of looking at it. I think Newcastle isn't you've sort of made Everton out to be a very tough game when Newcastle are
Newcastle at the Emirates.
Yeah. True, but
and
I think,
Spurs side that cannot defend anymore and lost another with Dawson going out because they were in action midweek as well. They were the replay, fifth round replay of the FA Cup with Stevenage. They eventually got through 3-1, but all sorts of injuries there.
Yeah, I mean, this is almost the story of this midweek in the end, and that'll be the question that, that Arsenal have as well is, you know, are these going to be longer term problems that they've picked up with Oxlade-Chamberlain going off? Obviously, Arteta picking up an injury game against Liverpool, and similarly now for Tottenham, how much is it going to hurt losing Dawson? And I believe Aaron Lennon picked up a hamstring injury as well. So, yeah, these are going to be the factors that have a huge impact down the end of the season.
Is that, you're our Premier League preview guy, Evan,
yes,
today.
I am.
Is that 4-point margin between the two North London sides, is it going to be smaller come Tuesday morn?
It could well be.
Good.
Spurs are seem to be falling apart. I don't know whether this is Harry's kind of audition for the England job to say, look, I can fall apart as good as anyone else, because that's what, you know, England managers do.
Were they always this bad at the back, or is it just been Ledley King finally running out of...
Well, I don't know. I mean, they seem to be a bit of a shambles recently. I think when Spurs don't have Bale and Lennon wide, they don't really seem to know what they're doing. Bale seems to be playing more infield at the moment. And while he's, you know, he can probably do that too, they miss him out wide, and their whole game is geared towards just getting it out to these guys with pace, and when that's not there, suddenly they look a bit of a shambles. Parker, I don't know whether it's now that he's kind of England captain or the big hero of English football, he just looks the kind of average player, you know,
you think?
Slightly better than average player that he's been for, you know, many years.
You're not a Parker fan then?
I think he's fine. He's not a top player though. He's a decent enough grafter. He runs around, but he's not a top quality player by any means.
No, I would agree with Evan that I think the problem stems from midfield. I mean, the 4-4-2 or 4-4-1-1 is really difficult to pull off against the better sides in the Premier League. That's probably one of the reasons why they've lost quite heavily against the better sides in the Premier League, by and large. And I think they can only pull it off if Modric is really on his game and not shoved out wide, which doesn't really work, and if Parker is able to run a lot. And I think over the recent weeks there might just be one or two signs that he's just run himself into the ground over the course of the season and can't quite keep up anymore. So I don't know. There's also this whole Luis Saha debate.
Should it be him or Defoe?
No, I was wondering whether Saha kind of, now that he's an option, has slightly, through no fault of his own, upset the balance.
Is it an Aspilia Newcastle scenario?
Well, that's... Yeah, that's the question I asked, and I was shot down by some very knowledgeable Newcastle fans who thinks that whole theory is wrong anyway, to begin with, that Aspilia upset the rhythm. We shouldn't perhaps rehash that debate, but I just looking at Saha in isolation, I just think the temptation to play two strikers is always there, but it also changes the way the midfield functions, because with Van der Vaart, of course, he's been injured a lot. Dropping deep, creating that extra man really helps against the better teams who will otherwise just control possession against you.
All right, I'm getting a headache from all this tactical talk. So let's have a bit of music, and then we'll return to the Champions League. Right, part two, and huge excitement on Wednesday night in Cyprus as Apollon Nicosia put out French giants Lyon to book their place in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. Our man on the line, Nassos Stiliano from the Cyprus Mail. Nassos, welcome back to Football Weekly.
Hi, James. It's great to be back on. I definitely didn't think that would happen after last time you said speak to you. If they make it past the round of 16. So, yeah, it's good to be on, definitely.
But they have. When you saw Lyon in the draw, did you not think, hey, we might have a chance here?
I think, yes, there was an element of that. At the same time, though, it was also an approach which would have been slightly dangerous, because Lyon are such an experienced side, and they've been, I think, to the last 16, 9 consecutive years, whereas this is the first time that Apoel have made it. So still, there was a chance that they did manage to avoid some of the bigger names in the draw, but I think they were still the comments coming out of Abuel were pretty much that they were still not expecting to qualify, and they would just be there to give everything.
Yeah, sure, and a huge achievement, even though the opponents were French. And a whopping night there at the stadium. One in every, statistics suggest that one in every 36 people in Cyprus was actually at the match.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable statistic. If you look at it, there were 22,701 people at the game, and proportionally based on the population, that would be the same as 1.7 million people kind of descending on Stamford Bridge or the Emirates on a Tuesday or Wednesday night to watch a Champions League game. So that's incredible based on the population in Cyprus.
Nassos Hayas, Rafael here. I've got a question for you about the wider significance of this this amazing story. Has it united Cyprus as a country in a way? Because we obviously know there are very different communities there. And, you know, Nicosia might not be everyone's everyone's favorite club from the Turkish side and the Greek side. Yeah. So what's happened?
I don't think there's really been an element. There's been an element of, let's say, intercommunal kind of bonding after that, because Apoel are very much a Greek Cypriot club, very much a Greek club. They like to call themselves. You'll see a lot of Greek flags in the ground where Apoel play, so they do their fans and the players. They want to kind of keep this Greek identity. But it's been interesting. There has been a lot of positive comments from fans of other teams, and given the really tribal nature of Cypriot football, that's impressive in how many people are congratulating Apoel and how many people are just saying, well played, Apoel, you've really, really done Cypriot football a huge favour here, which last time round, I think, when Anorthosis Famagusta made it to the groups in 2008 and when Apoel made it in 2009, there was a sense of pride, but it was not to the extent that it's become now with Apoel's achievements.
Third best team anyway in Cyprus now, Apoel Nicosia. So what are the chances for the next round, and who would you like to draw?
All the comments coming out of Apoel this morning was, will take anything other than Barcelona and Real Madrid. I think they just want to avoid those two, especially given what Barcelona did yesterday. And if they do avoid those two, they've said that they believe they've got a chance. So it's, I mean, there are still some really big teams in there, Milan, and next week we'll know the full set. But I think that if they do manage to avoid Barcelona or Real Madrid, they will give it a real go.
Now, also on Wednesday night, Barcelona against Bayer Leverkusen. 10-2 on aggregate, 7-1 Wednesday night. And the worrying feeling watching it, that this was a Barcelona team that wasn't even getting out of second gear. They just coasted past the German side, 7-1. How's that gone down in Germany?
Not that well. It's seen as a bit of an embarrassment, of course, which it was. Leverkusen was the second best team in the Bundesliga last year, so it's a bit worrying. Then again, it's interesting because Robin Dutz, the Bayer Leverkusen manager, afterwards took the Terry Connor line, saying, you know, first 35 minutes, we actually did really well. And they were punished, of course. They conceded the first goal when they were actually attacking. And they played with a bit more courage. And they did try to press them even at times. But unfortunately, whenever they did commit man forward, Barcelona seemed to score on the other end. So in the end, they just kind of gave up. If you remember the whole debate about who would get Messi's shirt after the first leg, this time they worked it out beforehand so they would at least avoid that embarrassment. But I'm not sure it was enough to placate the few fans that came with them.
Yeah,
might have been more valuable this time, the shirt.
Yeah. Might well be. It was perhaps the most extraordinary night yet in what's been an extraordinary season from the Argentine player. He's now, what, 53 goals in 49 matches this season in all competitions and for all sides, etc. And he's still just 24. He's almost the record goal scorer for Barcelona already. Any more stats? I mean, you resort to numbers, don't you? Because he's just beyond.
I've got the killer stat today.
Oh, go on.
Yeah, it was tweeted by someone called QPR Stats,
right?
And then retweeted into my timeline. But apparently, Lionel Messi has scored more hat tricks this season than all QPR players have managed since 1993.
Wow, that's an amazing stat.
Yeah.
Yeah. I liked Wayne Rooney tweeting, Messi's a joke for me, the best ever. So that's what his fellow pros think. I don't know what Cristiano Ronaldo must make of his former teammate dissing him like that. But he is. He is the best, isn't he? Messi, the best, Evan.
The best ever? Or the best?
No, I'm saying the best, comma, Evan. But I see what...
Yeah.
Anyway, and I'll tell you what also was scary, not just the fact that he seemed to be breezing past by her, but also when they brought on this young fellow, Christian Tello, yet another young... a promising thing from the La Masia production line. He looked absolutely blinding. Arguably, his goals were even better than Messi's.
No, they weren't. But
I would say arguably.
Yeah, they were good. What is frightening, I think, if you even with or without Messi, is the sense of inevitability that surrounds every Barca game these days. Maybe in the league is different because they don't seem to be... able to concentrate and focus as much, but you know when they must win a game, or even when they don't have to, like last night, there's absolutely no way that it will not hammer the opposition. I must admit, I went to have a pizza halfway through the game with Mrs. Honigstein because there was just absolutely no point to keep watching this. It was enough to go come home and watch the goals back.
You just watched the goals back?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
But I mean, it is interesting. Sorry, but it is interesting when you look as well. The reaction at the Camp Nou, like half of the fans, like when he scores, are just like, "Oh, that's nice," you know.
Well, they all do that thing of holding up the score with their fingers, which I have to say grates a bit.
But
like,
you know, you compare. I mean, obviously, it's a completely different situation. But you compare just because it's on the same night. Mm. That's what happened in Apoel when they scored and everyone's going crazy. Barcelona is like, it's another amazing goal from the best player in the world. That's
really
happened.
Different situations. People always ask about pizza and you know where we'd recommend. Where did you go, Raphael, with Mrs. Honigstein?
I went to Pizza East in Goulburn Road.
A lot of there's one in Goulburn Road now. Yeah. All right.
You should know this.
I didn't know there was one in Goulburn Road. It shouldn't be called Pizza East there, should
I know,
it?
I know. That's the flaw.
Because the other Pizza
East... flaw in the concept.
It's full of top celeb pizza eaters.
Yeah, this wasn't...
No?
No.
Well, apart from yourself and the good Mrs. Honigstone. All right. You're probably wondering what the Spanish... What the Catalans... What crazy headlines they've come up with on Thursday morning. But we've broken Sid. We're getting strange noises from our man in Spain. But rest assured, there will be a complete roundup of sport, El Mundo Deportivo, all that stuff, in my unmissable Friday morning paper review on The Guardian's website, all available on iTunes. Mm. Now, they were terrific, Barcelona, and of course nobody wants to get them in the quarterfinals. We're going to move on now, Raphael, to the Bundesliga. And actually, let me start by asking you, Bayern Munich, Basel next week. Can Basel win? Will they win?
The tie, you mean?
Yeah.
Yes. It's a very tricky situation. 1-0 down, no away goals. Bayern being very nervous, losing to Leverkusen at the weekend. Jupp Heynckes, rumours about his premature departure in the summer. Debate about who could succeed him. Bayern came out very, very strongly. Almost too strongly, you feel, against these rumours, saying this is absolutely outrageous. How dare you talk about our manager? There's absolutely no basis to us discussing various names when everybody kind of knows that
there are
some serious doubts about Heynckes.
Who are the names being mentioned to take over them?
Well, there are two names being mentioned at the moment. Certainly they were mentioned by Bild. One is Lucien Favre. He was a very obvious candidate because he's been working absolute wonders with Borussia Mönchengladbach. Him and Rummenigge played together in Servette Genève back in the 80s. And the other one is Mirko Slomka, who is the Hanover coach. Slightly low-key, you might think. But Uli Hoeneß is very impressed with him. And the thing with Bayern is always, because you've got these really two powerful figures on the board, Hoeneß and Rummenigge, that they kind of almost alternate when it comes to big appointments. So Heynckes is very much Uli Hoeneß's mate, and it was his idea to bring him back. Before that, Van Gaal and certainly Klinsmann were ideas of Rummenigge. And so Rummenigge should be next. in theory.
Why doesn't he go for the Basel coach? Because he's obviously terrific.
Yeah, Heiko Vogel. Well, he was, of course, a Bayern youth manager for a long time, and I think it would be a bit of a Vias Boas situation because I don't think he is quite ready yet for coming back to a club where he was in charge of Müller when they were 16, 17. Now to come back, I think it would be a bit too early for him because the personality that you need to deal with characters like Robin and Ribéry, I don't think you can have that as a coach who's only been in charge for 6 months.
All right. So back to the Basel question. Are they going to go through? Are they going to knock Bayern Munich out of the Champions League? I'm getting a funny face from you. No, you don't see it. You're not sure.
I do see it, but it's... I don't have any great confidence in Bayern at the moment because they just haven't been playing well.
What's happened to them?
The thing is, what you can say is that at home, they've looked very solid. It's away from home that they look disastrous. So they're playing at home to Hoffenheim on Saturday. If we see the kind of almost traditional Bayern reaction after a defeat and they hammer Hoffenheim 4-0, you know, the confidence will be back and then maybe Basel will feel, oh my God, we're up against it here. So I think it's very, very difficult to predict outright simply because so much of it is psychological with Bayern at the moment. And I think a lot of it will depend on how they manage to negotiate the game on Saturday.
Hmm. In the meantime, they've now ruled themselves out of the title race. That's pretty early, isn't it?
Yeah, everyone's ruled themselves out. This is the Bundesliga. Dortmund, who, of course, will be winning the title, it seems, their 7 points, because they've said, well, we're only thinking from game to game. We're not even bothering about thinking about the title. What do you want from us? Title. Stop talking about the title. We're not interested in the title. We're only interested in next week's game. And Bayern, who, of course, always talk about the title to the detriment of concentrating on next week's games, have said, no, that's it. You know, there's absolutely no point to talk about this because we're so far off now. We really need to concentrate on finishing second, which is an extraordinary statement by Bayern standards at the beginning of March. I mean, I don't think that they've ever... Maybe there was one season in 1992 where they finished 12th. But apart from that, I can't think of too many seasons where they were out of it or at least declared themselves out of it this early. So, yeah. That's all I've got to say.
Oh, okay. A couple of listeners sending in questions, or plenty of listeners, actually. But Epic Tet says, I read an interview with Paul Lambert. He spoke very highly of the attitude in German soccer. German coaching education seems to work very well for him. My question is, therefore, why has there never been a German coach manager in the Premier League?
I don't know.
And will there be soon, do you think?
I mean, Ralf Rangnick was very much flavour of the month for a while, before Doug Leash came back.
With
of
Liverpool.
Course, yes, yeah. Yes. Klopp would probably, you know, get one or two good jobs if he was available, but he really has found his dream profession, his dream situation there, and I don't think he's going to be shifted anytime soon. That is, incidentally, also Bayern's biggest problem, because they would traditionally react to any challenge by just buying the best players and managers if possible. That's how they dealt with Dortmund's threat by poaching Hitzfeld, although he had already moved upstairs at that stage. So Klopp would be a great candidate for many clubs.
What about Yogi Löw and Stamford Bridge?
Yeah, Yogi. Interesting story with his supposed meeting that probably didn't quite happen in Geneva with Roman Abramovich. Löw was there. There was photos of him because he was actually there in an official capacity at the automobile exhibition. Working with one of the German FA sponsors. But he was then said to have also met Mr. Abramovich. There were no sightings of this. The German FA themselves didn't seem 100% sure because there was no, you know, he didn't have any FA minders with him. So who's to say that he didn't have a quick espresso with Mr. Abramovich? But it seems as if people put two and two together and perhaps were happy to make a connection there because, of course, Ancelotti talked to Abramovich before taking the job in the very hotel in Geneva that Jogi Löw allegedly was seen at.
Oh, well, very interesting. The other question relates to Swansea, or maybe I'll ask that later on. A couple of quick posts. A Global Game says... Jimbo, is it true you had Father Dougal out of Father Ted? on one of the Football Italia games, or am I completely imagining this? No, it is true. It is true. Ardalo Hanlon, of course, a big Italian football fan, and we did that joke about this is small and this is a long way away, that one. The little
he
figurine.
Loves that.
It's a great joke. Yeah. Toon says, possible final eight draw in the Champions League. Well, he's saying, is this the worst ever quarterfinals in the Champions League? And the much maligned Europa League could have a much better quarterfinal lineup.
I find this really tedious. This happens every time English teams go out early. Oh, is this going to be the worst semi-finals because no English? No, there's lots of really interesting teams going through to the quarterfinals.
Those very same people say it's the most tedious quarterfinals. Then Colin say it should be the old knockout stage. You know, we want the minnows to go through.
This is quite like the old knockout stage in a way, with funny teams throwing up. And once you don't have all the teams, you know, these same people will be going and saying, "Oh, it's so boring when it's just Barcelona, Real Madrid, Man United." You know, Bayern Munich, whoever. It's like it's a bit of variety.
Make your mind up.
Make your mind up.
Whiners. interesting point, Toon. What's also interesting is that all the Champions League last 16 games so far, all the ties have been won by the southernmost team. Yeah? Just saying, you know. What's southernmost between Bayern Munich and Basel? You see, Napoli, you'd figure them to go through based on that.
Basel would be slightly more southern.
Do you think? Slightly more southern? Okay, all right then. Robbie Fowler update. We mentioned Robbie Fowler and his arrival at Blackpool. That's all over. He won't be playing for Blackpool. They offered him just £100 a week, basic, but a £5,000. You know this story, Evan. He didn't like that very much.
No, it doesn't say a lot for his, you know, his own mind that he thinks I might play. £5,100 a week probably sounds all right to most people, but, you know, strip it down to £100, you know, if he doesn't think he's going to play.
Yeah.
But, you know, if for a hundred, people could chip in and buy Robbie Fowler, not even for football, just to have him around. But, offer him maybe £200.
What else would you use him for, Evan?
Well,
There was famously, it just put me in mind of, there was famously an Italian village that won, their syndicate won the lottery back when Ronaldo was, the old Ronaldo rather than the Cristiano Ronaldo.
Fat Ronaldo,
yeah. Was in his pomp, and they tried to use their lottery syndicate win to make a bid to buy him for the village, though it didn't.
That's the kind of thing they make a film about, isn't it?
And what do they want to do with him?
I imagine they wanted him to play for the village team, but I don't know, maybe they wanted him to stand in front of the town hall.
Would he have to cover his own food costs?
Maybe they had a bakery and they thought he'd do a good job, I don't know.
You wouldn't see much. I see front of shop.
All very interesting. That's it for part two, though. Coming up in a second, look out, it's the Premier League. Now, Premier League back in action this weekend, and of course Monday when Arsenal take on Newcastle. I still can't believe, still smarting from you putting me down about that Everton-Spurs thing. Everton on a good run of form, you know. Anyway, but we won't revisit that. The race for fourth place, in inverted commas, you've got Chelsea taking on Stoke. Now, Chelsea, with their new manager, Roberto Di Matteo, they were also in action midweek. The replay with Birmingham, and they got through that. They're going to be facing Leicester in the next round of the FA Cup. Interesting to note the Chelsea fans there at Birmingham chanting, well, I'm not sure what the word was they were chanting, but they were chanting rude things about Rafa Benitez and how they don't want him managing their side.
Oh, and they were also chanting, Roman Abramovich, he sex who he wants.
Yeah, which is, you know, I don't think we needed telling.
Beef with Benitez seems to stem from him beating them twice in the semi-final of the Champions League, which you'd think would be a fairly high-class problem to have.
Yeah, absolutely. Good quality to bring to the party. Fernandes has much been made of the fact that he turned down the chance to score a goal with a penalty.
I believe he's now rapidly approaching 24 hours for Chelsea without a goal as well.
There's a great stat that I saw, and I'm not sure of the exact details, but it was something along the lines of, since March 2011, Fernando Torres has had as many managers as league goals. There you go. Stoke at the weekend for Chelsea and Roberto Di Matteo. Roberto Di Matteo, Chelsea and Stoke. Talking points. Mm. Off you go.
Mm. Well, it was interesting that he rested a few players. I don't think it was necessarily seen as a, you know, I'm going to take out all these old players and shoot them in the back of the shed.
It wasn't seen as that.
No, I don't think it was seen as that. Yeah. I think he was genuinely resting them because, you know, the bigger fish to fry, as it were, is definitely the Champions League, not the FA Cup. So they have to get in there. And I think it's going to be a test. I think it's going to be a real test.
Yeah, Stoke at home, though, as in Chelsea-Stoke rather than Stoke-Chelsea, a bit less of a test, but the Napoli game, of course, hanging heavily on
the
front.
You say that, but the issue is with Stamford Bridge, I think, to a certain extent. Oh, yeah. I mean, Vyas Boas, yeah, he was talking a lot of nonsense, but he kept on making the point that it's really difficult for the team to play with Stamford Bridge being so quick to jump on their backs when things don't go according to plan. You just wonder what kind of atmosphere will be there if it's a long, drawn-out 0-0 again and Chelsea don't create much. I don't think it's that easy a game.
Mm. All right, then. Okay. Meantime, their rivals, sort of, for fourth spot, Liverpool, are at Sunderland. That's not an easy game, with or without a beach ball.
No. Liverpool, I mean, I don't know. I suspect their Champions League hopes are already gone, but if they don't win this or if they lose this game, then I think they can forget about it.
Mm.
Which you would think has big problems for whatever kind of plan they have there, because
how many points is it now, Evan?
They have a game in hand and are 10 points behind Arsenal.
Right.
The game in hand is against Everton, which
is... That's on Tuesday.
Is it this Tuesday?
Yeah, it's coming up this Tuesday, yeah.
It is. I mean, Everton isn't... it's at home to Everton. They could, they would hope to win that. But, you know, Sunderland away, I just don't see them... I don't see them going on a run of winning 6, 7, 8 games in a row.
Mm.
I don't think they're good enough. I think, you know, they are... where they are in the table is about right for the players they have, but it's not right for the money they've spent.
Fair enough. Meanwhile, down at the bottom, a couple of very interesting games, as you've got those five teams separated by just 2 points. QPR, who are toppermost of those five teams, are taking on Bolton, who are in penultimate place. Wolves, meantime, with Terry O'Connor, are taking on Blackburn. Huge matches. Huge.
Wolves Blackburn game was the game that the Wolves board had in mind when they got rid of Mick McCarthy. Because I think they always, I think they very much thought this game could really decide what's happening at the bottom. When they sacked him, I think he was on points. Wolves were on points, level points with the three teams above them, or two teams above them. So it's a, unfortunately, I have to say this, it's a classic six pointer.
Mm.
And, of course, you would change the manager if it doesn't work, because that is almost like a mini final. Now, of course, will spirits be high after that slightly unfortunate defeat last week?
That mauling they received, at the hands of Fulham as well. It wasn't, you know, Man City or Man
United.
You
just think that the momentum is still with Blackburn, as much as you can talk of a momentum for a team who's been really marooned to the relegation places for most of the season. But they seem to have a bit more spirit and
classic match this one at the end of last
resistance
season
resistance to them
do you remember the end of last season with the two teams
when they lost and stayed up
and still stayed up
can I talk about QPR for
please
a minute
please talk about QPR.
Well, I mean, this is a huge game for them. They've one win in 15 in the league, I think. Yeah, so that's one win, I think, since in the league since Hughes has gone there. And they kind of desperately need to do something. I mean, I think Cisse is back.
Cisse should be back from his suspension.
But, I mean, it's Gibril Cisse. It's not necessarily, you know, it's not Lionel Messi is back.
One goal in 18 games for Leipzig.
And they, you know, Bolton are terrible as well. Bolton beat them 4-0 in the opening day of the season at Loftus Road. Bolton's home record is awful. They've done better away from home than at home. So, I mean, you would think QPR really needs points from this, unless, you know, or else they're going to be in real, real trouble.
This could be the game that drops them into the bottom three.
Yeah, and you just wonder if Flavio Briatore wouldn't have done a better job than Mark Hughes managing the side, judging from what we've seen on television last week.
Interesting programme, this. This went out on Sunday night on BBC 2, the four-year plan. And some controversy, because it was actually... filmed by Battier's production company, you know, and who came out of it? Well, Battier. Was his name Battier?
Mm.
Yeah, Battier.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was a very eye-opening documentary about the way the Rangers have been run, and particularly Briatore's approach to hands-off management. Yeah. There's a similar, some wag tweeting, there's a similar film in production over Chelsea. It's called The 4 Month Plan. Yeah. Anyway, now, what we haven't mentioned yet, though, is the race for the title. Man United, Man City, still just 2 points between them. Mancini looking increasingly stressed there on the sidelines as he looks over his shoulder and sees cheery old Sir Alex in his zip-up woolly undercoat storming up behind him. And this weekend, what do we have? Man United are at home to West Brom, who are coming off 2 big results, West Brom, and yet you still feel United are going to be good enough for that one, while Man City have to travel to ever so difficult to play away in Wales, Swansea.
Yeah, I mean, I think as well as West Brom have been playing, it's clearly a much trickier trip for City this weekend than it is, you know, for United being at Old Trafford. Swansea have tripped up a few teams this season, so why not? Have.
You just wonder what happens to the morale or the spirit of sides who've been batting against relegation for so long, but now feel that they're almost safe, like West Brom or Swansea. Yeah. Will they still play with the same intensity, or will they, as some people from the betting industry that I've spoken to in the past said, that those teams tend to do quite badly in the run-in, because you know, you start the season worrying about relegation, then you manage to stay up, and then you just think, you know, we kind of almost deserve to take it easy now. So I think that's going to be very interesting.
All right, Gareth J88 says, why was Gylfi Sigurdsson not getting in the Hoffenheim team? Apologies if this hasn't been addressed, because he's, you know, the man on fire at the moment.
He is a man on fire, and he was very good at Hoffenheim. I think he just didn't get on with Holger Stanislavski, of course, who has since been replaced by Marcus Babbel of ex-Blackburn and Liverpool fame. So I think Hoffenheim might regret this deal, but I think it's only a loan deal as far as I know. So
is it?
Well,
is it? Yeah. And what about, while we're on the subject of people who perhaps weren't performing in the Bundesliga but are now lighting up the score sheets in the Premier League, how about Pavel Podgorniak? Unpronounceable for some, unplayable for Wolves last weekend.
Yeah, a bit of a surprise. I mean, he's been okay at Stuttgart, not a total disaster, but by no means a complete success. He was bought as the replacement for Mario Gomez. You know, he was averaging well over 20 goals a season there. And I think he scored 22 in 91 games in all competitions. So it's not fantastic.
Is it 5-2 now for Fulham?
It is, I believe, yeah. Yes.
What 5-3.
And I think every single shot went in that he took. Oh. I think I'm right in saying.
What are your face defences as bad as Wolves in Germany?
Occasionally. I think his main problem was they didn't really trust him to be the main striker. He was moved around a lot. And also, I think Stuttgart as a side, not necessarily geared up to playing this kind of centre forward. I mean, Mario Gomez is similar in stature, but it was actually much more of a counter-attacking player when he was there. Pogrebnyak is, you know, your classic number 9 lump who just wants it to the feet, on the deck, wherever you can get it to him, and he'll try and shoot and score a goal. But right. It doesn't really, I think, add much when it comes to slightly.
You're a fan,
slightly
clearly.
More technical sides. I think he's okay. Oh. I don't think he's going to go on a run now and score hundreds of goals.
Well, you're facing Aston Villa this weekend, Fulham. But back to those two at the top. City and United, is it still going to be 2 points at the end of the weekend? Or could Swansea trip up? Or could West Brom trip? You remember Blackburn going to Old Trafford and springing surprise. Is there going to be a surprise at the top? Paolo Bandini?
Go on then. Swansea will draw with City and we'll be all square at the top at the end of the weekend.
Wow, with 10 games to go. Yeah. How exciting and dramatic.
And the thing is,
be?
Because I've said that now, it's definitely happening.
Wow. Wow, cool.
Heard it here all right. First.
Yes. very good. Well, that, I think, concludes our duties vis-a-vis today's Football Weekly Extra. As I mentioned, there will be a paper review up on Friday morning in the usual outlets. But that's it for now. We'll be back on Monday. Have a super weekend. Until then, thank you very much, Paolo Bandini, Raphael Honigstein and Evan Fanning, and Pretty to Ben, not necessarily in that order. Have a super weekend. Until we next speak, bye for now.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a 1 month, no commitment trial of the Audible service. Audible has over 50,000 audiobook titles available to download. Go to guardian.co.uk/audible for further details.